right, at this time I'd like to introduce our speaker, Kevin L.
Hey guys, my name's Kevin, I'm an addict. Whoa, was that too loud? All right. Trying to get it louder for the guys on the way back. Is that good enough? All right. There's always one smart ass in the crowd. Is my fly down? Okay, just checking because I get a little weird up here. All right, before I start, I want to give a little bit of warning. Sometimes I'm a little inappropriate, and so I want to apologize ahead of time. I asked God to help me with that, and he told me to fuck off. I'm just giving you that right up front. So I want to read something first. My clean date's March 26, 1988. I didn't say it for that. I just want to identify. My sponsor's a guy named Duke E. His sponsor's a guy named Jack B. And his sponsor's a guy named Chuck G. We've got a good line of guys in recovery. And I love the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. I got clean in the San Fernando Valley. Yeah, where it all began. So in September, right, we're going to be celebrating 65 years of the fellowship as we know it. Man, that's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. And while I'm on that, if you ever get a chance to go down to the San Fernando Valley Area Convention of Narcotics Anonymous that goes on every January, it's an amazing place to go. And a lot of history down there. You can go to the World Service Office and take a little tour, that kind of stuff. So I want to read something before I get started. It's from the basic text of Narcotics Anonymous. Hey, do any of you new people not have one of these things? Do you not have one? Where? Okay. Okay, hold on a second. I'm going to give this to you when I'm done reading, okay? All right, she needs a book. We'll see if we can get another one, but I only have one. You guys can cut it in half. You know what? You guys can share phone numbers and read it together. Holy crap. I have some sponsees who have dust on theirs. But I'm not pointing them out. So this comes from Tradition 3. It says, desire is the key word. Desire is the basis of a recovery. In our stories and in our experience of trying to carry the message of recovery to the addict who still suffers, one painful fact of life has emerged again and again. An addict who does not want to stop using will not stop using. They can be analyzed, counseled, reasoned with, prayed over, threatened, beaten, or locked up, but they will not stop until they want to stop. The only thing we ask of our members is that they have this desire. Without it, they are doomed. But with it, miracles happen. So I'm going to ask, do you guys have the desire? Then I say expect some friggin' miracles, man. And in my 30 years around here, I've been a witness to some miracles, man. I have just unbelievable. So in my home group, which is the Canby Friday Night Meeting of Narcotics Anonymous, and other meetings, I have had people that have come up to me and said, you know, Kevin, you don't really look like an addict. You kind of look more like a cop than an addict. It's the hair, I think. It looks like I got one of those bulletproof vests on now. My brother's LAPD, so how the fuck he got you that job, I don't know. But I want to tell you a quick story. My ex-wife and I, we used to have a car. It was a white Crown Victoria. You guys know what that car is? So we had some kids, and they all called it the cop car. And one time I was speaking down in Hollywood, and I was coming home from the meeting, and I had to get off on Rampart Street in downtown Los Angeles to get some gas. And when we pulled in to get some gas, two black and whites pulled into the gas station. And I'm like, I'm pumping gas. And I'm like, hey, guys, what's up? And they said, and I quote, "We are just here to back you up." And I was like, this is cool. And my wife at the time, she had that really short haircut, so she kind of looked a little copish, you know. I was going to say something else, but you know what I mean. And she started talking cop talk to him, like she's telling him we're from like the division in the valley, and I'm like, shut the you know. Now, I'm telling you, we got escorted by those cops onto the freeway. I have been escorted by cops before, but never onto a freeway. So if a cop can mistake me as a cop, I think it's important that I identify with you and tell you a little bit about my using. And I think that it's great. I've been to a lot of meetings where a lot of people share about all that drug history. And I don't want to get in there. I'm going to tell you about the first time I got loaded and the last time. I want to keep it short and sweet, if that's okay. I got some good using stories. We can do that later. First time I got loaded, I was young, and me and a bunch of buddies, we stole some Bergy beer. I don't know if you ever had that stuff. It's like $1.25 a case for that shit. It's the nastiest beer you could possibly buy. And I remember the more I drank of that beer, the funnier I became. I was like a stand-up comedian. So I figured if you're having this much fun on a couple of them, keep on drinking, right? And I did. And I ended up throwing up over and over and over again in my buddy's backyard and passing out my own vomit. It's not a pretty story, but it's just this is a good one. Now, back then, I wore platform shoes, and I had bell-bottom pants on, chemin de furs. I don't know if you guys... I was sporting it. I was cool. And I had really long, long blonde hair at the time. And his mom came out and began hosing me off on the lawn. I remember getting up and walking into the garage, and my buddies were passed out in the garage, and they're waking up and they're holding their head going, oh my God. Oh my God. And now you got to remember, I'm soaking wet and I got barf chunks in my hair. And I say to them, shit, that was awesome. We got to do this shit again, man. And that's the way it was for me. It didn't matter. It did not matter. First time I got loaded. I don't need to tell you all the stories, you know, between that and the last time. The last time I got loaded, I met this woman. She was my princess. She really was a princess. I now refer to her as Satan. And Satan and I had a few kids. And I'd wake up every day and go to work, and I'd eat these pills, you know, and come home after not blinking for 12 hours straight. And she said she didn't want to be married to me anymore.
Yay!
Bitch. And she left me with the three kids. I know. Yeah. Oh, see? Thank you. And when she left, she took all the money and the dope with her. Yeah, now you know why I call her Satan. And I had been to work. I'd picked the kids up. I was putting them to bed. And I was just getting something to get right on, you know. I needed just something to just mellow me out. And I was going through every stash spot in the house. And here's me. A little while back, I went fishing with my grandkids. And I'm a smoker. There's lots of smokers here, so you guys can probably relate to this more than other people. But while I'm out fishing, I went to light up a cigarette. And this is the best way to explain me that night looking for something to get loaded on. When I was fishing, I grabbed the cigarette, and then I reached into this pocket for a light. No light in there. This pocket, no. Back pocket. My jacket pockets. I do this. I turn around, and I look in the same fucking pocket again. Like I've done some fucking magic or some shit. I don't know. So me that night, I'm looking in the same stash spot over and over and over again, thinking that she had to have missed something, right? I ran across some cooking sherry. You ever drink that shit? Oh, she's sick, this chip. I poured myself a big, tall glass of cooking sherry. Yeah, it was nasty. And I'm still searching. And I came across this gun that I had. And see, by that time, I had become a little bit of a criminal. I kind of liked that. That was fun. And I thought, this is my thinking. The best way to get back at Satan is I'm going to shoot myself in the head, and then she'll have to come here and clean up this mess. See, I'm going to get even with her that way. That's my logic. So I loaded the gun up. I'm writing her one of those victim notes. It's like your first four step. You know what those are. Not my first four step. I took total responsibility. You guys are all full of shit. Anyway, and then Rachel, my youngest, she was still in a crib. She started crying, and I remember walking into her bedroom, putting the gun down, walking into her bedroom. I gave her a bottle, changed her diaper, I don't know what. And I remember walking back into my bedroom. Now, back in those days, in 1988, everything in my house was mirrored. I don't know if... I mirrored everything. I like the kitchen sink would have been mirrored if I could get away with it, right? And I remember seeing that gun on top of my mirrored tabletop dresser. And at that time, this was my first spiritual awakening. I realized that I had some problem. And I needed help. And fortunately for me, there's this woman who carried this message of hope to me, this program called Narcotics Anonymous. Now, I wasn't real receptive when she carried this message. This lady and I used to work together. Her name's Cambria. And some of you may know her. But she came back. She worked for me, and then she quit because she wanted to get clean. And she came back after she got a year, and she got this little one around her neck. And she's like, I got 1 year clean. My life is good. Everything's bitching. And I'm like, get away from me, you know. Because when you're getting loaded, you don't want to hear that, right? Year two, she comes back. Now she's got this little gold two around her neck. I got 2 years clean. You know, I'm in a relationship. My life is great. I'm like, fuck off. But me that night in that bedroom with that gun, I remembered her. And I picked up the phone and I called her. And she directed me to my first meeting of Narcotics Anonymous. And she wanted to be here tonight, but her kid is graduating from college. Yay. Yeah, no kidding. So let me tell you about my first meeting of Narcotics Anonymous. It's called the Relationships and Recovery Meeting. Sunday night. And I walked in, I think I had a leisure suit on at the time. I don't know if you guys know what leisure suits are. But I thought it was like going to be a medical intake or some shit, you know. And the guy who was leading the meeting, he looked like Fabio. He had this long, blonde, flowing hair. And I'm looking at these people, and I'm like, dude, I would never even buy dope from these people. How the hell are they going to help me? And Fabio tricked me. At the beginning of the meeting, they said, is there anybody here for their first Narcotics Anonymous meeting? And I went, yeah, me. And the whole room went, yeah, right on. And I was like, fuck. And Fabio is like this. He's like, come on up and get a welcome key tag. He wants to hug me, man. I'm like, okay. I got up and hugged Fabio and sat my little ass back down, man. A couple other things happened at that meeting. This lady, Deborah L., she stood up to take a cake for 3 years clean. And when she stood up to take a cake for 3 years clean, she wasn't wearing a bra. And I said, this program is bitching. I may be able to do this fucking program. Now, you guys remember, this is one day clean, man, and that's all I was at. This is awesome program. Now, I got to be honest with you, when she stood up to take that cake for 1 year clean, I didn't hear a friggin' word she said. Not one word. But then Fabio began to share, and he started talking about this obsession to use. And what he talked about more than anything is being able to not use on those days when you just didn't want to get loaded. How many of those times were there for me where I would swear to God I'm not going to get loaded tomorrow and find myself getting loaded tomorrow? Over and over again. You know, a lot of people say, you never have to use again if you don't want to. Well, I didn't want to for a long time. I didn't know how I was going to get clean even though I didn't want to get loaded. So he carried this message, and I got this little glimmer of hope from Fabio's share. And I remember at the end of the meeting, they all circled up to say this prayer. And you guys, I come from a land far, far away from here where I used to say that Our Father prayer over and over again. And I love that prayer, but when they circled up that night to say that prayer, I have to be honest, it kind of freaked me out. I thought you were going to put me up with the priest and have me do that thing. Not that thing. Jesus, you guys are sick. Sick people in this room. I put me at the airport passing out flowers or something. Seriously, I was freaked out. And fortunately, there was this guy that noticed that I looked like a deer in headlights when he started saying that prayer, right? And he comes over to me to talk to me. And let me tell you about this guy. First of all, he hands me this blue book and he said, here, brother, this is for you. Now, this guy had blue jean cutoff shorts on and thigh-high moccasins that went all... So that when he walked, you know, the moccasin things would like click back. His shorts were so short and so tight, if he bent down like a Tesco would hang out. And moccasin boy hands me this book. And he's like, and I'm thinking, what the hell is this guy going to want for this book, man? I am freaked out by moccasin boy. I'm being honest with you. And he says to me, you know what, man? Tomorrow night, we're going to go to another meeting. And I said, we're and I don't know what happened, man. I had a little glimmer of hope, and sure enough, man, the next day we were headed up to another meeting of Narcotics Anonymous. Separate cars. A little hope, not a lot, right? But I remember at that meeting, they were talking about gratitude. I had 2 days clean. Satan's gone. I got no money, no nothing, three kids. And they were talking about gratitude. And somebody asked me to share. And I just told the truth, man. I said, I don't know what you guys are talking about, man. I don't know what you're talking about. Gratitude. How am I supposed to be grateful? Can you guys just tell me how I'm supposed to stay friggin' clean? Can you just do me that favor? Because I don't know how I'm going to leave here tonight and not get loaded. Would you just do me that? And this is what they shared with me. They shared if I put half the effort into staying clean as I didn't get loaded, chances are I'd stay clean. They said if I did 90 meetings in 90 days, chances are I'd stay clean for a long period of time. They said if I carry a little white book, we have something in the program, it's a little white book, and they call it the little white book because it's a little, yeah. We're pretty clever here. There you go. And you carry that everywhere you go, and you get phone numbers with guys with over 5 years clean, and you call those people, and you actually pick up the phone and call them. And I began to do that. And sure enough, man, I got a little clean time. And I remember walking into this meeting for the second week, that relationships and recovery meeting, and this guy, Tom R., never forget it, as long as I live, he walks over to me and he gives me a hug, and he says, Kevin, it's good to see you. And that hug, You guys, it wasn't good to see me very often. If I was coming to your house or your grandma's house, or it wasn't good to see me. And I believed him when he said that it was good to see me. It was a long time since I had heard that. But here's the deal. See, when I got here, I thought I had a little drug problem. And if you guys could just get me off the drugs, everything would be fine. See, if drugs were the problem, then detox would be the answer, right? Just get off the drugs and be like, whew, thank God that shit's over. But I have this disease of addiction that continues to manifest itself in my life, no matter how much clean time I have. My disease tells me if I buy it, eat it, or fuck it, I'll be fine. I'm sorry. Did I say that? And I may be fine for a minute, but the truth of it is that there's something else going on. Let me tell you a little story. I was speaking in Hollywood, and I was really early to the meeting, and I stopped to get a cup of coffee. I like coffee. I walked in this Hollywood coffee shop, and I order a cup of coffee, and the guy goes, dude, you look like a guy who really likes coffee. And I go, shit, I love coffee. He goes, man, you got to try this coffee. It's Blue Hawaiian coffee. And I'm like, Blue Hawaiian? All right. And he turns around, and he fixes me up a little shooter cup of Blue Hawaiian coffee. And I'm like, this shit's good coffee. He's like, you like that, man? He goes, I got this coffee. It's Colombian gold coffee. I'm like, fix me some shit up, man. Colombian gold? He fixes me up a little shooter cup of Colombian gold coffee. I am, oh, shit, yeah, this is, oh, yeah, oh, yeah. You got to remember, I'm the only guy in the store, right? He leans across the counter and he goes, he looks around, he goes, dude, I have this coffee. It's white monkey shit coffee. It is the most expensive coffee in the world. You have to try some. And I say to him, monkey shit? Okay. And he fixes me up a shooter cup of monkey shit coffee. He tells me that monkeys eat the coffee beans, shit them out, some little dude collects them, and they sell this shit for a lot of money. Now, I went in to get a cup of coffee. I left with like $150 worth of coffee. And I was negotiating with the son of a bitch to buy his store. I was his only fucking customer, okay? But I'm going to buy his goddamn store. You hear those guys that say my drug of choice was more? Fuck more. I want it all, bitches. I want it all. And so, you guys, I put some bird houses in a tree one time. Birds nested in these bird houses. A week later, there are 40 bird houses in the tree. It don't matter what it is, man. If it's badass, I'm going for it. This disease is insane. I still suffer from the disease of addiction. There is no cure. But I come for regular treatment to meetings of Narcotics Anonymous. I pray on a regular basis. I meditate. I'm of service to our fellowship. I work our steps. I'm in constant contact with people in the fellowship. That's what I do. Nobody should have 30 years clean. That's stupid. It's ridiculous. But here I am, man. And how did I do it? One friggin' day at a time. Just one day. I don't know. So I get a little concept of the disease of addiction and being powerless over it. But then what they said to me is that you have to find a power that's greater than this disease, a higher power. So let me tell you how I got in touch with a power that's greater. I had some issues with God when I got to Narcotics Anonymous. And a lot of the readings say that word, God, in them. And it kind of freaked me out a little bit. But I'm going to explain to you how I got through that. I had these three kids. My eldest was Joshua. And at that point in his life, he was potty training. And one day, he pulled his high chair over to the aquarium, my aquarium. He yanked his pants down, and piss was peeing in my aquarium. Now, I picked him up, and I took him to the toilet, right? I didn't beat his ass, right? He's my kid. He took a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and stuck it in a Betamax machine. Betamax. Ask your seniors. It was expensive. It was really stupid expensive. I didn't beat him up. I love my child, right? And that's the relationship I have with my higher power. My higher power has let me go around pissing on shit all over the place, sticking things in inappropriate places. And he loves me, right? In spite of that stuff, he allows me to make amends. And that's not sorry. I've done that my whole life. But it's about change. It's about when I'm in the throes of it, when I'm in the sickness of this disease, going to people who have got more experience or who are in my corner that can help me and walk me through it so I don't have to act out in that kind of behavior. How I can change my behavior so I don't continue to do the same thing over and over again. When I go to Las Vegas, I don't take my wallet in with me. I probably shouldn't do that at a birdhouse store either. Or a coffee shop for that matter. I want to say something. This disease of addiction manifests itself in my life as well as it manifests itself in people that I care about, people that I deeply care about. See, I thought when I had about 20 years clean that because I had a great program, a great sponsor, a great home group, I've worked these steps, that somehow or another I was going to be able to help my daughter stay clean. And I tried and nearly killed her trying. Seriously, I was crazy. But see, you know what she didn't have? She didn't have that thing that we just talked about, that desire. I had the desire, and that's not enough. And guess what? Tomorrow, she's going to be celebrating 8 years clean. And I say that because when I finally got out of the way, when I finally realized that there was nothing I could do but trusted you to do it, if she showed up, you guys wrapped her up, loved her, and showed her how to stay clean one day at a time. I can't help my family member, but you guys can. I can't help the people I love. But here's what I'm going to ask. See, I have that home group called the Canby Friday Night Meeting. And when somebody walks into my home, I know that they're a stranger. Could you imagine if you walked into my house, I've never met you before, and you just walk into my house? They're like, well, who the fuck are you, dude? What are you doing here? And that's what we need to be conscious of at our home groups. If there's a stranger walking in your meeting, you don't have any. Make sure they are made to feel welcome, wanted, and needed. Because I'll tell you why. Maybe it's my kid. And I'm going to give you my word that if one of your kids, your mom, or your brother, or somebody that you love shows up at my home group, we're going to wrap them up and make them feel like the most important person at any meeting. I'm begging you, do the same. So, working the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous, here's the deal. I know a lot of people that won't we have to offer. And I know a lot of people that work steps 1, 2, and 3. And that's great. That'll keep you clean. It really will. I know people who've been around for a long time, just working with steps 1, 2, and 3. But you know what that is? That's a recipe for suicide. And I'm just going to tell you why. Because there's going to be some day in your life when the shit is going to hit the fan. It's going to happen. Because it happens to you're living life, man. And in this life, some hard stuff comes up. And you damn well better have some tools. And those tools are through the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous. So here's what I'm saying. If you want what we have to offer, then you got to be willing to make the effort. And it's not just enough to show up to meetings. It's not just enough to show up at some service commitment. It's about reading that book. It's about working the steps. It's about telling the truth. There used to be a guy, when I first got clean, a guy named Pepe. And Pepe used to say that all of the steps, every one of the steps, are merely an exercise in truth-telling. It gives you a better understanding of how to tell the truth one at a time. And that's what we strayed. You know, when I got clean, things were a little different in Narcotics Anonymous. If you started sharing and you were kind of off, maybe a little mentally crazy because you're brand new, there'd be some big guy right next to me who'd say, shut the fuck up. If we want to learn how to get loaded, we'll ask you. But you need to shut the fuck up. And they wouldn't say, keep coming back. It works if you work it. They'd say, work the steps or die, motherfucker. And I'm not saying that Narcotics Anonymous has gone in a bad way, because our fellowship is exploding. It's exploding. We're being more loving and kind. But I think as sponsors and as mentors in our program, there's times we need to take some of these new people aside and say, tonight you're going to sit down and listen. Just listen. And sometimes if a friend or somebody you care about is having a hard time working the steps, you know what you can do? You can get together with them and sit down together and work that step together. Take the time. This disease is killing people, man. Every day of the week, we are fortunate to be here. How much clean time do you have? 30 days? What's better than 30 days clean? Not a fucking thing. Not a fucking thing. So it takes a lot to pull off one of these conventions, right? Or one of these blues fest, or a convention, or a dance, or what have you. Now, when I was out there getting loaded, I had plans. Let's go camping. Let's go camping. Remember that plan?
Yeah.
Remember the plan to go camping?
Yeah.
We siphon the gas. We raid somebody's house and get food. We find canvases or whatever. We steal mom's blankets. And we never left the fucking neighborhood. It's a hell of an idea. We had great plans. But we never did shit, right? Or, I love this. I remember sitting around with my friends getting all loaded. And what did we do? We sat and watched fucking Flipper. For like hours at a time. Flipper. And then we'd lie. Shit, that was fun. We didn't do shit but watch Flipper, man. We are so full of shit when we're out there getting loaded. I've been all over the place. You guys, I got to fly down here today from Portland, Oregon, get picked up in Burbank, and drive with my brother, Terrace, from Burbank up here and see people that I love and care about and new people that I'm meeting today. Who gets to do, what kind of drug addict gets to do that shit? I never left the goddamn garage. I don't go in a bathroom anymore except to go to the bathroom. That's a trip, man. I remember my kids, Daddy, are you still in there? Yeah, get away. What kind of an animal does that, man? I love the fellowship. I remember sitting around with my buddies, and there would be all these junkies sitting around, and I'd be, you know, fixing the motorcycles. And they'd all be like, they'd be telling me, dude. Oh, they'd be more like this. Hey, man, you need to slow down. As they're burning my couch, you know. You need to get some help. We always got great advice for that other guy, right? You remember those guys? I don't know. I had a lot of those guys in my life. I want to talk about that. At 20 years clean, my life was great. Okay? I had a wife, 5 kids, big giant house, cars, Winnebagos, yada, yada. My own business, everything. And it all came crashing down, right? It was time for me to get a divorce. And it was my decision. It just was. I don't need to get into why, but I just knew it wasn't going anywhere. And I used to have this feeling about depression that it was for punks, that all you needed was a little swift kick in the ass and you'd be okay. And then there I was at 20 years clean, could barely leave my house. And fortunately, I had a foundation in Narcotics Anonymous of people that loved me enough to come to my home, pull me out of my bed, push me into the shower, and love me through that. Here's the deal. What I found out was that while I thought everything was being ripped out of my life, what I've come to know is that there are times in our lives when God has a bigger plan for us. So all that stuff had to go away so I could do what I'm doing now. And what I'm doing now is I take care of my 88-year-old mom. I am her sole provider. And I'm a good son. There's 7 kids in my family. She's with me. The dope fiend, you know? It's fucking amazing. Now, it ain't good for my love life, you know? Kevin, are you in there with somebody? And she's always going, I think I should leave now. I'm like, oh, boy. Yeah, try that one. It's not that fucking funny, okay? But this is what we do, man. We become those responsible people that we never thought we could be. Because you guys have just given me everything in my life. Here's the deal, man. I may have some funny stuff to say, but I've lived an incredible life so far. You should see me with my grandkids. I got grandkids, man. I shouldn't be this fucking old. I should. I still picture, when I see myself in the mirror, I'm like, dude, who is that? But here's the deal. At the end of a meeting, at the end of this meeting, what's going to happen? We're all going to circle up. And who's going to be there? There's going to be men, women. There could be Hell's Angels and Vagos and Mongols. There could be Jews and Christians and Muslims. You name it, people in this room could gather. And what do? We all call our higher power into the center of that room, and then we pray for somebody else. Could you imagine if the planet did that shit? What a trap. That's what we get to do here in these rooms. It's the way you take it out there that matters. How do we act outside of this place? So here's my promise to you. I'm going to keep doing this thing, but I want you guys to know something, and this is really important, that I wouldn't have anything in my life or anything worth sharing if it weren't for people like you. So for that, I need to thank you with all my heart and soul and tell you I love you. Thanks for letting me share.